Truth Seekers, Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in. Grab a chair, put a little more salt on the popcorn, get that blood pressure up, and stick around for a while, okay? Okay. Another one of those days, huh? You know, I was going to get all snotty and come on the air tonight and say, well, another one of Glenn Beck's listeners got out of control and tried to take out a building and 200 people. But after reading his suicide note, I've come to the conclusion he probably would know Glenn Beck from a dead cat. Not that there's a whole lot of difference, but this guy had some real problems. And we'll get to that in a minute. We will. excuse me. Roz just sent me something from Kenyatta from Canada. I saw this morning in the New York Times. And it a headline that I see these every once in a while, kind of a little mental whiplash. No big deal. I mean, it's not a real heart stopper, but you see it, click, and you look again and say, wow. And then you move on, get on with your day. And the headline is, Snipers Imperil U.S.-Led Forces in Afghan Offensive. Snipers Imperil U.S.-Led Forces in Afghan Offensive. Let us sink in a second. Okay. Roz writes, how dare the snipers imperil U.S.-led forces when they, the forces, are trying to kill the snipers? I mean, the nerve of it. It's getting to the point where you can't commit genocide without being shot at. Yeah, thanks, Roz. You know, that was one of those headlines. I thought, wait a second. We've invaded somebody's country after supporting them when somebody else invaded their country. Oh, my God. But this time we've decided to invade because we've got to have that pipeline. Not we. The elites have got to have that pipeline. Otherwise, how are they going to get all that natural gas and oil out of the Caspian Sea area and into the Indian Ocean where they can load it on Liberian flag tankers, you know what I'm saying? So the excuse for all this is the Taliban. If you want to go after some people, religious people, who have been committing murder and mayhem for two millennia almost, why don't we attack Rome? Let's invade Vatican City. Let's get the terrorists who have clustered around various popes for the past 1,800 years. Wouldn't that make more sense? The Catholic Church has killed more people than the Taliban, the Church in one day, than the Taliban has since, if they really exist, since forever. Give me a goddamn break here. The Taliban, huh? I don't like them. Of course I don't like them, but I don't like Catholic priests either. But I don't advocate bombing them or shooting them. So it would make just as much sense to invade Vatican City, wouldn't it? I mean, if you really want to go after a nest of imperialist terrorists, why not go there? People have been spreading genocide, disease, destruction, murder, mayhem, poverty, bankruptcy, enslavement of women, God have mercy. That's the Catholic Church. I'm sorry. If you're a Catholic, suck it up. Change channels. I don't know what to tell you. It's the truth. So there we are. We're after the Taliban. Or is it Al-Qaeda? Or no, who is it? Wait a minute. I've lost track. Where's my scorecard here? Hold on. Oh, there it is. Who is it we're after? What a headline. A Well, speaking of the Catholic League, Elton John had a recent interview with Parade Magazine, the Sunday Supplement, a lot of newspapers, and he spoke about his past relationships and, you know, his fame and drugs. But William Donahue, the president of the Catholic League, now there's a guy who has, this guy, the Catholic League, woo! This is a guy who would like to take all the Jews and Muslims, the atheists, the queers, and most color people, and just line them all up, build a bunch of enclosures, pound stakes in the ground, and burn them! Donahue is one of those people, had he lived 500 years ago, would have been a willing leader of the Inquisition. Oh, you know what I'm talking about. Kind of porcine-looking guy who just looks like he's spoiling for a fight. You peck on my church, and I'll burn you. I'll burn you to sight. It was a statement that Elton John made regarding Christianity that has got this reaction from William Donahue, the president of the Catholic League, among others. But Donahue is the one who just cracks me up. Donahue doesn't agree with Elton John. And Elton John said, in case you missed it, quote, Jesus was a compassionate, super intelligent gay man. End quote. In a statement to Showbiz Tonight, which and CNN, William Donahue says, quote, Jesus was certainly compassionate, but to say he was super intelligent is to compare the Son of God to a successful game show contestant. What? Donahue's been hitting the holy water just a little too often there, right? William? Ah! Little bit of that sacramental wine? Ah! He went on to say, quote, more seriously, to call Jesus gay is to label him a sexual deviant. But he didn't stop there. But what else would we expect from a man who previously said, from my point of view, I would ban religion completely? That's a quote from Elton John. Oh, Father Donahue, I know you're not ordained, but you might as well be. Come on, come on. You don't know if Jesus was gay or not. And let me ask you something, Father Donahue. Supposing when you know, the St. Paddy's Day parade is put together in New York, as it is every year, and your crazy people try to keep gay Catholics or gay Irish, that's right, gay Irish from marching in the parade, most of whom are Catholic, you dumbass. But and you just go out of your way to stop that. Supposing you found out that a group wanted to march in the parade, and it was 13 men, one of whom was the leader, and they all dressed in sandals and robes, and most of them had long hair. None of them were married, and they just traveled around telling people about strange and wondrous miracles and things, and that the 13th among them was the Son of God. What would you do, Willie? You'd freak out, right? Because not because somebody's walking around saying they were, you know, miracle maker, but because there were 12 single men following him, and they had on robes and sandals. And what's under those robes?
Ooh, think about it, Willie.
Poor old Willie. He would say, get out of here. You're not Christian. Get out of here. You're a bunch of queers. Man, people drive me crazy. Absolutely crazy. Well, as long as I brought up religion, this is from Michael, and he's got a last name, but I don't want to give it over the air. Subject line, Orthodox Jew in Connecticut who agrees with you in Israel. And he writes, I was listening to your Wednesday night show on my podcast. I am a subscriber and heard you say right before your straw poll on primary challengers to Obama that you didn't think there were any Orthodox Jews listening. I am listening. And I agree with your position on Israeli and U.S. foreign policy. One of my heroes is a great Jew named Noam Chomsky. And for the straw poll, my dream is another Jew, Bernie Sanders. Sincerely, Michael, and his last name. Well, thanks, Michael. I appreciate it. I got to share with you, coming back from this break, a letter that was sent to the White House couple of weeks ago, 2 days after President Obama announced his plans to convene this bipartisan summit on health reform, coming up in, what's the date today? Today's the 18th. Next week in Washington, he's, Obama's still trying to do bipartisan. He doesn't realize that, these Republicans hate Negroes all the way down to their stinky feet, so it's never going to work. But there's a letter sent to the White House, and I want to share it with you when we come back.
Have to have a great parade. You don't have to have any clothes on. You're a Catholic the moment that came, because every sperm is saved.
Day Screaming with Mike Malloy.
Somebody sent me a little piece of video. Glenn Beck just furiously backpedaling today about his insistence on violence. Huh? I talk about it on this program because in a defensive posture, when you know, when the right wingers come looking for bear, I hope they knock on my door. But Beck and Hannity and Limbaugh and the rest of them, they advocate violence in a very muted way, but in a way that their brain-dead zombies pick up on right away. But, man, after that plane crash into the office building in Austin today, oh, Beck almost ran out of his trousers trying to get away from his own statements. God. Anyway, the letter... This was sent to the White House on February 9th, 2 days after Obama announced his plans to make another stab at a bipartisan summit on health reform in Washington a week from today. It is, here's what it says. Dear Mr. President, Physicians for a National Health Program, an organization of 17,000 doctors who support single-payer national health insurance, respectfully requests that you invite one or more of our representatives to participate in your White House healthcare session on February 25th. We note that in your call for the meeting, you urged Republicans, Democrats, and health policy experts to gather, go over all the options, and, quote, walk through them in a methodical way so that the American people can see and compare what makes the most sense, end quote. We would like to offer several of our members as health policy experts for this important task. As you may know, two key research studies that helped drive the health reform process forward this past year, one in the American Journal of Public Health that found 45,000 deaths annually are linked to lack of health insurance, and another in the American Journal of Medicine that found 62% of personal bankruptcies are linked to medical bills and illness. Both of these were the work product of Harvard Medical School research teams guided by Physicians for a National Health Program, co-founders Drs. David Himmelstein and Dr. Steffi Woolhandler. Drs. Himmelstein and Woolhandler, who are also primary care physicians in Cambridge, Mass., have had several other groundbreaking studies published in our nation's leading medical journals, including one in the New England Journal of Medicine that shows administrative costs consume 31% of U.S. health spending, most of it unnecessary. They've also frequently testified before Congress on their research. We urge that you invite them to participate in the February 25th meeting. The presence of Dr. Margaret Flowers, our congressional fellow, would also enhance the meeting. Dr. Flowers, a Maryland pediatrician, has met with numerous members of Congress and testified before two congressional committees last year about the urgent need for single-payer health reform. And finally, we ask that you invite our president, Dr. Oliver Fine, to participate. Dr. Fine, an internist and professor of clinical medicine and clinical public health in New York, attended the March 5th White House Summit on Healthcare. He is a past vice president of the American Public Health Association. Detailed biographies and contact information for each of these doctors are available upon request. And it's signed Dr. Ida Hellander and she is the executive director of Physicians for a National Health Program. What do you suppose will be the result of this letter to President Barack Obama? To this point, apparently, now, this was sent February 9th, to this point, there has been no response from the White House. And today, of course, is the 18th. Given what the president has said in the past here, or this past year, about health reform, like Nancy Pelosi's declaration of impeachment, I think, of George Bush, I think Barack Obama's declaration regarding single-payer health care comes from the same source. It is off the table. So, if we find out that the President of the United States responds to these folks, Physicians for a National Health Program, I will certainly report that to you. But I think we can agree that any response, if one is forthcoming, it'll be one of those mealy-mouthed replies, not written by Barack Obama, but written by one of his staff people that says, while the president fully supports doctors XYZ ABC, and fully supports the public health ideas and goals of your organization, we are working toward a solution to the incredible problem that health insurance reform has turned into. We appreciate your letter. Thank you very much for writing. Right? All right, we have a break coming here. We'll be back momentarily. So stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Of truth, it's more Mike Malloy.
Before the hour. By the way, Laura Flanders will be joining us tomorrow night for an interview, chat, conversation, not interview, conversation. What time, Kathy? First hour, second hour, third hour, second hour? We look forward to that. Grit TV, Laura and I worked at Air America together. And she is the host of Radio Nation, an hour-long program. Is that's weekly, isn't it? Radio Nation, I think, along with the Nation magazine. She is just an excellent, excellent progressive. And it's going to be our pleasure to have her on the program tomorrow night. So second hour tomorrow. Don't miss it. Laura Flanders. Email here from MJC. I don't care if Obama's not living up to expectations, so long as he continues to scold WASP elites like John Boehner, he is a great president. Imagine the humiliation of Boehner, a closet racist like all Republicans, having to take this ass-chewing from a black man. I love it. What he's talking about, it was at Huffington Post, or what my email, I don't know if it's man or woman, what our emailer is writing here, is that today at the this huge circle jerk that's going on in Washington, D.C. right now, the CPAC convention. God. excuse me. Where all the Republicans and conservatives get together to play with each other. Well, one of the speakers was House Minority Leader John Boehner. He said today that, all right, you ready? President Barack Obama, quote, slapped the table, wagged his finger, and scolded me at a recent White House meeting. That's what Boehner said. Boehner's crime? Scaring the American public into a state of economic anxiety, right? Boehner accused the president of excessive finger-wagging lectures. His words. And as Huffington Post puts it, driving the point, he relayed his version of a jobs-related conversation that Republican leadership had with Obama and his advisors. Here's what Boehner said, quote, I was in the White House for a meeting a few weeks back. We were talking about the economy and jobs, and I was explaining that these Democrat policies, you know, cap and trade, national energy tax, government takeover of our health care, card check, higher tax rates, you know, all of this was paralyzing business owners because they had all of this uncertainty. And, you know, no small business owners can plan, invest, or hire new workers in this kind of environment. But the president didn't like it. He looked at me and he slapped the table and he said, Boehner, it's not my policies that are paralyzing these employers. It's you Republicans who are scaring them. And I said, Mr. President, American people aren't scared about what we have to say. They're scared by the policies that are being promoted by your administration and your colleagues up on the Hill, I told him. And I went on, I said, well, here's the thing. The American people want leaders who will listen. They don't need any more lectures coming to Washington. Huffington Post has asked the White House to confirm what Boehner said here. And Huffington Post will update this post if they get an answer. So Boehner's complaint, President Obama slapped the table and scolded me. I mean, I'm a Republican. I'm white. God damn. I mean, I can take just about anything, but, you know, to have a to have an African American slap the table? I don't know. Of course, you know, when it gets right down to skin color, Boehner is darker than Obama. But Boehner has good hair, see. And but can you imagine Boehner? Can you imagine that? He slapped a table. Man. You know what we call that back in Ohio? Huh. We call that uppity. We also call it uppity in Mississippi. But can you imagine that? Can you imagine some piglet like John Boehner, this son of a bitch that hates black people so much he tries to look black because he thinks it makes him cool? Look at my tan. You like this? Do you know what happened if Boehner? I'll bet you when Boehner goes into the house shower stall or whatever, I'm sure there's something there for these freaks, and takes off his clothes, I bet he's white as a sheet. And I mean that in a number of ways. White as a sheet except for his face and his neck. What do you want to bet? What do you want to bet? That's not a tanning bed tan, I don't think. I think that's one of those bottle tans. Jesus, these people. Eric Erickson of RedState.com, a collection of real halfwits online. He spoke at CPAC about how to exploit the media to promote CPAC's nutty agenda and their lunatic ideas. Well, what a weird son of a bitch Eric Erickson is. What a, I mean, really, he really is. Now, listen here as he says that they, this fringe group of banana heads, they have Fox News. Big surprise there, right? Fair and balance. Fair and balance. So once again, Obama's right, and you're right, and I'm right about Fox News. Here it is. This is Eric Erickson.
Take technology. Take the community of activists in this room. Put all of you online. Feed you into talk radio. We have a significant advantage that we haven't fully exploited, that we're just beginning to exploit. Town Hall now in Salem Media and getting hot air. It's a beautiful marriage. Online, radio together. Expand out now, all of us. to TV. We've got Fox News, yeah, I guess. But imagine the way we can collaborate online to fight the left, to beat them at their own game. It's not that hard. We just have to do it.
Sit your bony ass down, white boy. Oh, my God. Something you're just beginning to exploit? Are you out of your mind, you freak? But you heard him say that, right? We've got Fox News. Wait a minute. They're supposed to be fair and balanced. Play it again. I want to hear it again. I interrupted. Go ahead. Eric Erickson. Redstate.com. A whole collection of Nazis that cluster. I don't know where these freaks really exist, but they, you know, they just. Have you ever gone to their website and read some of the posts? This is a bunch of beetle eaters, if ever they existed.
Take technology. Take the community of activists in this room. Put all of you online. Feed you into talk radio. We have a significant advantage that we haven't fully exploited, that we're just beginning to exploit. Town Hall now and Salem Media and getting hot air. It's a beautiful marriage. Online, radio together. Expand out now, all of us, to TV. We've got Fox News, yeah, I guess. But imagine the way we can collaborate online to fight the left, to beat them at their own game. It's not that hard. Yeah. We just have to do it.
Yeah. Fight the left. Come on, you little wimp. Come fight Mike Malloy. Come on, Eric. I'm calling your bony ass out. Come on, Eric. Fight the left. You cowardly little freak. Oh, my God. Salem. That's Salem Broadcasting, right? Salem Media. No surprise there. We got Fox News. Oh, God. I wonder what the Saudi Arabian sheikh, member of the royal family, who is the biggest shareholder in Fox News after the Murdoch family, I wonder what Sultan Shabadamana Hamana Hamana thinks about this guy getting up saying, we've got Fox News. Huh? I wonder what Murdoch thinks.
Oh, wait a minute, you're not supposed to say that. God damn it. No one's supposed to know that. Oi. Put another shrimp on the bobby.
If you're listening in Australia, don't. I know. That sucks. I understand. It's crazy out here. It's really crazy. Really crazy. Adam in Roanoke, Virginia writes, Mike, would you characterize today's airplane attack in Austin as the opening act of Tea Party terrorism? What else do these people have in store? After reading the suicide note, I don't think this guy was responding to anything except his own personal demons and the horrible frustration of trying to exist within a system that is set up to benefit one half of 1%. At the very top in this country. And the other 99.5% of us can go pound sand into whatever body orifice we want to pound sand into. This guy was not a Timothy McVeigh, although his actions of crashing an airplane into a building that I understand had, what, 100 or 200 people in it, that is a crime beyond, I mean, that's a clear display of absolute sickness. When I first heard this today, I thought, well, there goes another Beck acolyte trying to impress his lord and master. But after reading the letter and listening to some of the commentary today, I don't think this guy knew Beck from Adam's house cat. I think he was responding to just a whole lot of horror. If you want me to, when we come back, I'll share the letter with you. Suicide note. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Oh, did the music disappear? Oh, wait. There it is. No. Here it is. There's music.
Air Force One, fly on by Rio Mayo.
Oh,
Because without dissent, it's not America. Here's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour, you know, I've been saying on this program, a lot of people have been talking about this, blogging about it, writing about it, and other people talking about it in little enclaves of progressive or liberal or rational talk that still exist in media, that these slimy bastards like Glenn Beck and Hannity and the rest of these people, some of these websites, Free Republic and Red State, I mean, these clusters of Nazis have been working as hard as they could to set the stage for people who are very, 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 very frustrated and lost and don't know what to do to react violently. I've been talking about this for, months? A piece of human waste like Glenn Beck, a real psychopath. Now, remember, we've been talking about this is the kind of guy who wants to see open violence in this country. He wants to see warfare between black and white, left and right, up and down. Doesn't make any difference to a Beck or a Limbaugh or a Hannity. These multimillionaires that convince the unemployed former middle class rednecks to go kill people and blow up things and crash your airplane. They do it for sport. They do it because they can. The same reason a dog sits down every 10 feet and licks his own penis. A dog does that because he can. If Beck could do it, he would be doing that also. But he does this kind of stuff for sport. This constant provoking of people with his television program and his radio program, constant provoking, constant convincing them, pumping into their heads about the evilness of government. When it is not government that's evil, it is this capitalistic system that allows people like Glenn Beck to eat your goddamn flesh, to eat your children's flesh, to take everything away from you and laugh at your ass while he's convincing you, he and his ilk, that it's somebody else doing it and not him. He represents the class that destroys everything they can get their hands on so that they can accumulate more wealth, money, position, power, property, jobs that truly should belong to you. And then to convince these poor, brain-dead, misguided right-wingers that something like government is doing this to them? It's amazing. It's amazing how stupid we, the American people, are. And how a demagogue like Beck and the rest of these slime balls follow the demagogue's songbook, and they know exactly how to tap into this. This gives them big ratings and makes them look very, very popular. And it forces their syndicators and their television networks and so on and so forth to keep them on the air because they bring in lots of revenue. And corporate America is willing to support this because corporate America knows how valuable Glenn Beck and his ilk really are, you see. So there are a lot of disaffected people out there right now, millions of people who are on the verge of ripping their own eyeballs out. They don't know what to do, don't know where to turn, don't know where to go. People are losing their homes, their children's education, their jobs, the stability, whatever it was in their marriage, respect, intergenerational respect within their families. Everything is just going to hell, not as a result of government. God damn you, Beck, you filthy liar. Not as a result of government, but as a result of the predatory capitalism that is eating this country alive. God, I hate these people. I hate these Beck bastards. Oh, do I hate them. So, I digress into my own little personal hate trip. So, knowing, and Beck knows this, and so does Hannity and Limbaugh and O'Reilly and the rest of these pissants. They know this, that there are hundreds of thousands, millions of people out there who are right on the verge and of something. And within that massive group of people who are just frustrated beyond belief, you will find a Timothy McVeigh. You will find somebody like Joe Stack. You will find people who, although they don't pay a whole lot of attention to this right-wing horror that's pumped across the airwaves in this country 24/7, 365, it's in their heads anyway. And when they do happen to hear this, somebody, some just wonderfully famous person who's out there all the time, Jesus Christ Limbaugh and Parrot Boy Hannity and the Suicider Beck, and they start to internalize the message. And Beck and Limbaugh and Hannity and these filth, they know that. That's what they're banking on. They are rolling the dice knowing that somebody is going to hear the clickety-clackety, clickety-clackety, and when those sons of bitches come up snake eyes, they're going to react the way this poor guy did today. The fact that he tried to wipe out 200 people is clear and compelling evidence of the evil and the damage that this son of a bitch Beck and the rest of his people have unleashed. It is one thing to have an attitude about IRS. I have been there. I have fought some down and dirty battles with IRS. And after years of fighting, I won. And it took a lot of time. You're goddamn right it did. And it took an awful lot of effort. And poor Joe Stack probably could have done the same thing. But because this country is saturated with right-wing neo-Nazi hate coming from people who want to see this happen so they can say, well, see, I told you, which is what Beck does. This guy went berserk. More on this when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy.
When did your life start?
Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. The death toll from the plane crash into the office building in Austin, Texas, the death toll now stands at 2. The identities, according to the Austin Fire Department, have not been confirmed. 2 other people who were injured in the incident were taken to a hospital. 11 others were treated for minor injuries. Andrew Joseph Stack III, 53 years old, an Austin resident, set his house on fire on Thursday, according to speculation. And then crashed Piper Cherokee PA-28 into the building, which houses an IRS office with nearly 200 employees. Austin Police Chief Art Acevedo said, quote, this appears to be an intentional act by a sole individual, end quote. Now, there are websites out there that are already saying, well, did you know that besides the IRS, they had CIA offices in there? Did you know this is a Manchurian candidate thing? Did you know what really happened? Did you know? Well, they lied to us about 9/11. There we go. It's gotten to the point where, well, all that may be true. It's gotten to the point where one person absolutely losing control and being whipped into a frenzy by the right-wing rhetoric that floats around the ether constantly. When that person does go berserk and commits an act like this, he died in the plane crash, obviously, as had no idea. Could have been 200 people dead in there. Could have been 100 innocent people who are just working at a government job. Now, the teabaggers would tell you that they're not innocent. But I don't think this guy was impacted by any particular ideology. I think he was triggered by people like Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and Bill O'Reilly, multimillionaires who, as I said a minute ago and I've said before, they agitate and get people worked up for sport, hoping that something like this will happen. They hope it will happen because it gives them material that they can use then to twist and contort into any shape they want to convince even more people to go berserk. It's the same thing as the crazy Muslims who inspire suicide bombers. Same thing. Our cause is greater than you, my son. Now, I'm going to read this. And if you don't want to stick around, I understand. If you're reading this, you're no doubt asking yourself, why did this have to happen? The simple truth is that it is complicated and has been coming for a long time. The writing process started many months ago. It was intended to be therapy in the face of the looming realization that there isn't enough therapy in the world that can fix what is really broken. Needless to say, this rant could fill volumes with example after example if I would let it. I find the process of writing it frustrating, tedious, and probably pointless, especially given my gross inability to gracefully articulate my thoughts in light of the storm raging in my head. Exactly what is therapeutic about that, I'm not sure, but desperate times call for desperate measures. We are all taught as children that without laws there would be no society, only anarchy. Sadly, starting at early ages, we in this country have been brainwashed to believe that in return for our dedication and service, our government stands for justice for all. We are further brainwashed to believe that there is freedom in this place, and that we should be ready to lay our lives down for the noble principles represented by its founding fathers. Remember? One of those was no taxation without representation. I have spent the total years of my adulthood unlearning that crap from only a few years of my childhood. These days, anyone who really stands up for that principle is promptly labeled a crackpot, a traitor, or worse. Well, very few working people would say they haven't had their fair share of taxes, as can I. In my lifetime, I can say with a great degree of certainty, there has never been a politician cast a vote on any matter with the likes of me or my interests in mind. Nor, for that matter, are they the least bit interested in me or anything I have to say. Why is it that a handful of thugs and plunderers can commit unthinkable atrocities, and when it's time for their gravy train to crash under the weight of their gluttony and overwhelming stupidity, the force of the full federal government has no difficulty coming to their aid within days, if not hours? Yet at the same time, the joke we call the American medical system, including the drug and insurance companies, are murdering tens of thousands of people a year and stealing from the corpses and victims they cripple, and this country's leaders don't see this as important as bailing out a few of their vile, rich cronies. Yet the political, quote, representatives, end quote, thieves, liars, and self-serving scumbags is far more accurate. They have endless time to sit around for year after year and debate the state of the terrible health care problem. It's clear they see no crisis as long as the dead people don't get in the way of their corporate profits rolling in. And justice? You've got to be kidding. How can any rational individual explain that white elephant conundrum in the middle of our tax system and indeed our entire legal system? Here we have a system that is by far too complicated for the brightest of the master scholars to understand, yet it mercilessly holds accountable its victims, claiming that they're responsible for fully complying with laws not even the experts understand. The law requires a signature on the bottom of a tax filing. Yet no one can say truthfully that they understand what they are signing. If that's not duress, then what is? If this is not the measure of a totalitarian regime, nothing is. How did I get here? My introduction to the real American nightmare starts back in the early 80s. Unfortunately, after more than 16 years of school, somewhere along the line, I picked up the absurd, pompous notion that I could read and understand plain English. Some friends introduced me to a group of people who were having tax code readings and discussions. In particular, they zeroed in on a section relating to the wonderful exemptions that make institutions like the vulgar, corrupt Catholic Church so incredibly wealthy. We carefully studied the law and then began to do exactly what the big boys were doing, except that we weren't stealing from our congregation or lying to the government about our massive profits in the name of God. We took a great deal of care to make it all visible, followed all the rules exactly the way the law said it was to be done. The intent of this exercise and our efforts was to bring about a much-needed re-evaluation of the laws that allow the monsters of organized religion to make such a mockery of people who earn an honest living. However, this is where I learned that there are two interpretations for every law, one for the very rich and one for the rest of us. Oh, and the monsters are the very ones making and enforcing the laws. The Inquisition is still alive and well today in this country. That little lesson in patriotism cost me $40,000, 10 years of my life, and set my retirement plans back to zero. It made me realize for the first time that I live in a country with an ideology that is based on a total and complete lie. It also made me realize not only how naive I had been, but also the incredible stupidity of the American public, that they buy, hook, line, and sinker, the crap about their freedom, and that they continue to do so with eyes closed in the face of overwhelming evidence and all that keeps happening in front of them. Before even having to make a shaky recovery from the sting of the first lesson on what justice really means in this country, around 1984, after making my way through engineering school and still another 5 years of paying my dues, I felt I finally had to take a chance of launching my dream of becoming an independent engineer. More in a moment.
What have I become? My sweetest friend. Everyone I know goes away in the end. And you could have.
Flying monkey free fun and frivolity with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. We are reading Joe Stack's suicide manifesto. On the subjects of engineers and dreams of independence, I should digress somewhat to say that I'm sure that I inherited the fascination for creative problem solving from my father. I realized this at a very young age. The significance of independence, however, came much later during my early years of college. At the age of 18 or 19, when I was living on my own as a student in an apartment in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, my neighbor was an elderly, retired woman, 80-plus seemed ancient to me at that age, who was the widowed wife of a retired steelworker. Her husband had worked all his life in the steel mills of central PA with promises from big business and the union that for his 30 years of service, he would have a pension and medical care to look forward to in his retirement. Instead, he was one of the thousands who got nothing because the incompetent mill management and corrupt union, not to mention the government, raided their pension funds and stole their retirement. All she had was Social Security to live on. In retrospect, the situation was laughable because here I was living on peanut butter and bread, or Ritz crackers when I could afford to splurge, for months at a time. When I got to know this poor figure and heard her story, I felt worse for her plight than for my own. I, after all, thought I had everything in front of me. I was genuinely appalled at one point as we exchanged stories and commiserated with each other over our situations when she, in her grandmotherly fashion, tried to convince me that I would be healthier eating cat food, like her, rather than trying to get all my substance from peanut butter and bread. I couldn't quite go there, but the impression was made. I decided that I didn't trust big business to take care of me and that I would take responsibility for my own future and myself. Returned to the early 80s, and here I was off to a terrifying start as a wet-behind-the-ears contract software engineer. And 2 years later, thanks to the fine backroom midnight effort by the sleazy executives of Arthur Andersen, the very same folks who later brought us Enron and other such calamities, and an equally sleazy New York Senator, Patrick Moynihan, we saw the passage of the 1986 Tax Reform Act with its section 1706. For those of you who are unfamiliar, here is the core text of the IRS section 1706, defining the treatment of workers like contract engineers for tax purposes. And then he has a section here about this. I'm going to skip it. During 1987, I spent close to $5,000 of my, quote, pocket change, end quote, and at least 1,000 hours of my time writing, printing, and mailing to any senator, congressman, governor, or slug that might listen. None did. And they universally treated me as if I was wasting their time. I spent countless hours on the LA freeways driving to meetings and any and all of the disorganized professional groups who were attempting to mount a campaign against this atrocity. And the atrocity, let me digress again, the atrocity he's talking about is how contract workers were to be treated for tax purposes. Okay? All this only to discover that our efforts were being easily derailed by a few moles from the brokers who are just beginning to enjoy the windfall from the new declaration of their freedom. Oh, and don't forget, for all of the time I was spending on this, I was losing income that I couldn't bill clients. After months of struggling, it had clearly gotten to be a futile exercise. The best we could get for all of our trouble was a pronouncement from an IRS mouthpiece that they weren't going to enforce that provision. In other words, they weren't going to harass engineers and scientists. This immediately proved to be a lie, and the mere existence of the regulation began to have its impact on my bottom line. This, of course, was the intended effect. Again, rewind my retirement plans back to zero and shift them into idle. If I had any sense, I clearly should have left. I should have abandoned engineering and never looked back. Instead, I got busy working 100-hour work weeks. Then came the LA Depression of the early 1990s. Our leaders decided that they didn't need all of those extra Air Force bases they had in Southern California, so they were closed, just like that. The result was economic devastation in the region that rivaled the widely publicized Texas SNL fiasco. However, because the government caused it, no one gave a blank about all of the young families who lost their homes or street after street of boarded up houses abandoned to the wealthy loan companies who received government funds to shore up their windfall. Again, I lost my retirement. Years later, after weathering a divorce and the constant struggle trying to build some momentum with my business, I found myself once again beginning to finally pick up some speed. And then came the dot-com bust and the 9/11 nightmare. We'll pick this up right after this break as soon as we come back. Stay with us. We are reading the suicide letter posted at a website by Joe Stack, the man who flew the plane into the building in Austin, Texas today.
Yourself with the truth. It's more Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour, we are continuing with the letter left online by Joe Stack prior to his flying Cessna into a building in Austin, Texas today that housed IRS and almost 200 people working for that agency. So far, two bodies recovered, identities of which are not known. Two more in the hospital. Dozen others treated for minor injuries at the scene. Years later, after weathering a divorce and the constant struggle trying to build some momentum with my business, I found myself once again beginning to finally pick up some speed. Then came the dot-com bust and the 9/11 nightmare. Our leaders decided that all aircraft were grounded for what seemed like an eternity. And long after that, special facilities like San Francisco were on security alert for months. This made access to my customers prohibitively expensive. Ironically, after what they had done, the government came to the aid of the airlines with billions of our tax dollars. As usual, they left me to rot and die while they bailed out their rich, incompetent cronies with my money. After these events, there went my business, but not quite yet all of my retirement and savings. By this time, I'm thinking that it might be good for a change. Goodbye to California. I'll try Austin, Texas for a while. So I moved, only to find out that this is a place with a highly inflated sense of self-importance and where damn little real engineering work is done. I've never experienced such a hard time finding work. The rates, the pay rates, are a third of what I was earning before the crash. Because pay rates here are fixed by the three or four large companies in the area who are in collusion to drive down prices and wages. And this happens because the Justice Department is all in the take and doesn't give a blank about serving anyone or anything but themselves and their rich buddies. To survive, I was forced to cannibalize my savings in retirement, the last of which was a small IRA. This came in a year with mammoth expenses and not a single dollar of income. I filed no return that year, thinking that because I didn't have any income, there was no need. The sleazy government decided that they disagreed. But they didn't notify me in time for me to launch a legal objection, so when I attempted to get a protest filed with the court, I was told I was no longer entitled to due process because the time to file ran out. Bend over for another $10,000 helping of justice. So now we come to the present. After my experience with the CPA world following the business crash, I swore that I'd never enter another accountant's office again. But here I am with a new marriage and a boatload of undocumented income, not to mention an expensive new business asset, a piano, which I had no idea how to handle. After considerable thought, I decided that it would be irresponsible not to get professional help. A very big mistake. When we received the forms back, I was very optimistic that they were in order. I had taken all of the years of information to blank, and he came back with results very similar to what I was expecting, except that he had neglected to include the contents of my wife's unreported income, $12,700 worth of it. To make matters worse, he knew all along this was missing, and I didn't have a clue until he pointed it out in the middle of the audit. By that time, it had become brutally evident that he was representing himself and not me. This left me stuck in the middle of this disaster, trying to defend transactions that have no relationship to anything tax-related. At least the tax-related transactions were poorly documented. Things I never knew about, anything about, and things my wife had no clue would ever matter to anyone. The end result is, well, just look around. I remember reading about the stock market crash before the Great Depression and how there were wealthy bankers and businessmen jumping out of windows when they realized they screwed up and lost everything. Isn't it ironic how far we've come in 60 years in this country that they now know how to fix that little economic problem? They just steal from the middle class, which doesn't have any say in it. Elections are a joke. They steal from the middle class to cover their asses, and it's business as usual. Now when the wealthy blank up, the poor get to die for the mistakes. Isn't that a clever, tidy solution? As government agencies go, the FAA is often justifiably referred to as a tombstone agency, though they are hardly alone. The recent presidential puppet George W. Bush and his cronies in their 8 years certainly reinforced for all of us that this criticism rings equally true for all of the government. Nothing changes unless there's a body count. Unless it's in the interest of the wealthy sows at the government trough. In a government full of hypocrites from top to bottom, life is as cheap as their lies and their self-serving laws. I know I'm hardly the first one to decide I've had all I can stand. It has always been a myth that people have stopped dying for their freedom in this country, and it isn't limited to the blacks and poor immigrants. I know there have been countless before me, and there are sure as hell going to be many after. But I also know that by not adding my body to the count, I ensure nothing will change. I choose to not keep looking over my shoulder at Big Brother while he strips my carcass. I choose not to ignore what is going on all around me. I choose not to pretend that business as usual won't continue. I have just had enough. I can only hope that the numbers quickly get too big to be whitewashed and ignored, that the American zombies wake up and revolt. It will take nothing less. I would only hope that by striking a nerve that stimulates the inevitable double-standard, knee-jerk government reaction that results in more stupid draconian restrictions, people wake up and begin to see the pompous political thugs and their mindless minions for what they are. Sadly, though I spent my entire life trying to believe it wasn't so, but violence not only is the answer, it is the only answer. The cruel joke is that the really big chunks of blank at the top have known this all along and have been laughing at and using this awareness against us, fools like me, all along. I saw it written once that the definition of insanity is repeating the same process over and over and expecting the outcome to suddenly be different. I'm finally ready to stop this insanity. Well, Mr. Big Brother IRS man, let's try something different. Take my pound of flesh and sleep well. Joe Stack. And then there's a postscript. The Communist Creed, from each according to his ability, to each according to his need. The Capitalist Creed, from each according to his gullibility, to each according to his greed. Now, the end there, of course, will be what the millionaire sons of bitches in media in this country, the Becks and the Hannitys and the Limbaughs, what they focus on.
See? He was a commie!
But if you were listening to his manifesto, you notice he was all over the place. The frustration finally got to him. And there's a lot of people out there who can be motivated to acts of violence. And Beck knows this, Hannity knows this, Limbaugh knows this, O'Reilly knows this. This is why Beck today, I understand, was backpedaling furiously so fast he almost ran out of his own underwear to get away from the idea that he is a huge advocate of violence, of other people to engage in it, so that he and his cronies, is the mega wealthy in this country, can watch and giggle and hoot, kind of like the gods in Greek mythology on Mount Olympus who would sprinkle all sorts of hell down on the poor humans and then laugh and giggle and watch as the poor humans committed all sorts of atrocities against each other as a result of the gods' play. That's exactly how these people see themselves, the Becks and Hannitys and Limbaughs. They are so removed, so insulated, so protected, they can do this. And they are so goddamn bored that they do this for sport. If you listen to their programs, if you see what they're talking about, you'll understand that the push is there constantly. And every time one of these pig sons of bitches get caught, they immediately start backpedaling. The worst, of course, is this useless, overweight, brain-dead son of a bitch, Rush Limbaugh, who's been doing this for years. And every time he's caught,
oh, well, I didn't mean he was Dumbo like the elephant. I just meant, anybody got any OxyContin? How about a Viagra? I'm going down to the Dominican Republic. Need something.
Millions and millions of dollars is what they take to put this garbage out. And they put it out. I look at these teabaggers. I look at the people at the CPAC convention, these poor sons of bitches who sit there and applaud someone like Dick Cheney and his sorry-ass daughter, who stand up there and knowing full well what they're doing, knowing full well what their political goal is. And there sits this huge crowd of people in the audience applauding their own hangman.
Get your news unfiltered, only with Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour, Dan in Costa Rica writes, Mike, did you get a chance to actually read the manifesto left by Joe Stack? Well, yeah. That's what we just did. Oh, he sent this before I started reading him. Other than the violent part, so much of what he says is on the money. Actually, reading his thoughts, it's amazing he chose the IRS rather than Bank of America. I probably sound pretty out there, but I actually read it closely, and other than his personal issues with the IRS, he could have been any of us who are disgusted with capitalism. Yeah, and I got a bunch of emails like that today. Here's another one from John who writes, Mike, is it just me or does this guy make a whole lot of points that all of us who want to see this country shift toward the needs of the people constantly make? I'm not condoning what this guy did, but I understand a lot of his frustration. Yeah, I'm sure the right will spin this, that taxation and hatred of the IRS is why the guy did what he did. But if you read his entire scribe, he makes a whole lot of points that I feel are valid but unmentioned. Mike, I've been listening to you since 04 when I left Dell Computers, and I look forward to you presenting this your way. That is the way I would present it if I were in your position. John. Well, here's an example of what I'm talking about, how the neo-Nazi right in this country, all of these sons of bitches, whether it is a piece of human waste like Beck or a train wreck like Free Republic or a stinking cemetery sewer like redstate.com. Get this. This is from Spokane. An organizer of a weekend tea party gathering in eastern Washington said today she was the speaker who drew applause from the crowd by calling for one of the state's Democratic U.S. senators to be hanged. Diane Capps is her name, of Clarkston, but she said her remark about Senator Patty Murray was taken out of context, and what she meant was that Patty Murray should be voted out of office. You goddamn... See, this is the way these weaselly, wormy sons of bitches are. This is just what I was talking about. As soon as you catch them, they backpedal like crazy, whether it is this wasted piece of human crap, Diane Capps, or if it's a psychopath like Beck or the Bug Man. Remember Tom DeLay, the son of a bitch who breathed in too much formaldehyde or whatever the hell he used to kill things? Or Hannity, who sits on top of his pile of money, just parrots whatever he's told to say. And then you have somebody like Diane Capps, who says a United States senator should be hanged, and you right-wing pieces of waste that send me your toy little emails about some of the stuff you hear on this program, I don't call for U.S. senators. Well, maybe it's not a bad idea, some of them. Could we start with, you get my point. And the guy sent me this, Jeff, says, Mike, I've been reading The Civil War, by David Williams, a book recommended by one of the callers on your show. The slaveholders stole the elections in every state to secede from the Union. And Sam Houston, that Texas hero, was a pure racist. Brought Texas into the secession after all the states that supplied the cotton for the northern industrials had seceded from the Union. The northern industrialists weren't any better about the plight of the black slaves or the poor white trash. The history of the USA is an obscene saga and remains just as obscene. The only progress are the toys and gadgets we are sold 24/7 on TV, billboards, newspapers, and the internet. Jeff in Valencia. As far as the points that Joe Stack made in his death manifesto, for me, it's all washed away. Any validity that might have been there is washed away in the fact that he murdered at least one innocent person, injured more, and had his plan worked a little bit better, it could have killed scores of people. You know, it's kind of like, it's different, but there's some similarities in the Timothy McVeigh Murrah Federal Building. I realized that McVeigh had been sucked into this neo-fascist right and the Christian Reconstruction movement, all kinds of craziness. But when the conversation that was held between him and drawn a blank on his name, the writer, Timothy McVeigh and Gore Vidal. And Gore Vidal talks about this in his book, Endless War for Endless Peace, I believe was the name of it. And McVeigh lays out a case against the Bush 1 crime family about the slaughter that they engineered in Iraq and the madness perpetrated. Now, McVeigh had his brains eaten by these right-wing sons of bitches that cluster around Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, or used to until they got bankrupted, this filthy patriot movement, this disgusting right-wing political movement, the neo-fascists, the neo-Nazis. Poor McVeigh, right? And I know, don't send me emails and say, are you crazy? He was a goddamn murderer. Of course he was. The point I'm trying to make was that people like McVeigh, people like Joe Stack today, when you listen to their argument, if you remove the violence... I guess you can't do that because that's the essence of what they're saying, well, at least the essence of their actions after they issue their manifestos. But if you remove the violence, you find that these are people who are not railing against some political ideology other than this right wing fascism that has taken hold in this country. Whether it is, and I'm not calling Obama a fascist, Jesus, he's a corporatist. There is a slight difference. I think Obama is more like Mussolini in his approach to, get the trains running on time and then everybody can get to work, you know, that sort of thing. But the system is so rotten in this country, the political and economic system, and the people at the top, these elites in right-wing talk radio, who constantly use the whip on their poor, miserable, brain-dead, teabagging listeners while they, the Becks and the Limbaughs, sit on top of that heap and just suck every single thing they can out of these poor sons of bitches. That's the sad part, because there'll be more people like Joe Stack and Timothy McVeigh, thanks to Glenn Beck, Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, Bill O'Reilly, Michael Savage, and all the rest of these pigs. The hour. Welcome back. Irish Dave writes in, Mike, how is it these people don't realize that the government is corrupted by big business, unable to distinguish between the bribee and the bribor? By the way, that idiot in Clarkston, Washington actually said hung and not hanged. Would be hard to do since both U.S. senators from the Evergreen State are women. Clarkston, Washington is right across the Snake River from Lewiston, Idaho. They don't have too much book learning in them parts. Thanks, Dave. Yeah, we're going to be live in Spokane come Monday. That ought to be a hoot. I wonder how long that'll last. Bit of good news, a group of black farmers, this is from the Wall Street Journal, a group of black farmers have reached a, or has reached, a $1.25 billion settlement with the U.S. Department of Agriculture over a longstanding civil rights case. In a conference call today, Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack said the settlement would close, quote, a sordid chapter in USDA history, end quote. John Boyd Jr., president of the National Black Farmers Association, said, quote, this is a very historic, emotional day for black farmers. What he's referring to is the settlement. He also said that the Obama administration is going to have to help him finish the job, end quote. And what he's talking about there, the settlement remains contingent on the money being appropriated by Congress. And it comes from a class action civil rights lawsuit that was brought 13 years ago. I remember talking about this on the air. It was titled Pigford versus Glickman. It was filed by three African-American farmers who alleged that the U.S. Department of Agriculture had discriminated against them and other black farmers. Among other things, the farmers claimed they were systematically denied USDA loans and farm subsidies by agency officers. Some farmers said that even if they were awarded a loan, the agency took so long to allot it that time ran out to plant that season's crop and they were unable to pay other debts. And you know, this is recent history, but this is the way it goes. I mean, every time I hear one of these self-satisfied white racist teabag sons of bitches or a Beck or a Neil Bortz or the rest of these thugs talking about this land of opportunity, just pull yourself up by your bootstraps. And then you look at this case of these farmers, these black farmers, who didn't ask for anything from anybody except what all the farmers were getting. But because they were black farmers, screw you. You don't get anything. And if you do, boy, we'll give it to you in a way that you can't use it. So good for the Black Farmers Association. Now, it's not all that much money. The Pigford case, which was filed in U.S. District Court, was settled in April 1999. District Court in the District of Columbia. And in that case, just over $1 billion was awarded to about 16,000 claimants. But the case was reopened after black farmers argued that thousands of additional farmers hadn't been given the opportunity to make claims. And the 2008 Farm Bill included a provision that restored those farmers' access to settlement awards. And the Wall Street Journal says it isn't clear how many farmers could qualify for the payout, but it could be tens of thousands. Last year, President Obama inserted a $1.15 billion request in his budget proposal to Congress. Lawmakers didn't appropriate the money then because no formal settlement was in place, according to U.S. Associate Attorney General. He added, I don't think anybody in Congress doubts the funds will be appropriated. Oh, the settlement is the latest in the Obama administration's push to focus on civil rights issues and close out longstanding discrimination claims. In December, just passed, the Obama administration proposed spending $3.5 billion to settle longstanding claims that the federal government mismanaged American Indians trust funds. Trust funds. American Indian trust. Here, have some more beads. We'll take Manhattan. Trust funds? American Indian trust funds? Shouldn't it be the other way around? Shouldn't Native Americans be administering trust funds to white people? Oh, never mind. Oh, and one other thing. Bernard Carrick, you remember him? The guy who almost became the head of Homeland Security and would have. He was New York Police Commissioner. He was the police commissioner during the September 11, 2001 attacks that destroyed the World Trade Center. He spent a brief stint in Iraq training that country's police force after the U.S. invasion in 2003. And a year later, Bush nominated him to be Homeland Security Secretary. But it didn't quite work out. Kerry withdrew his name after allegations surfaced that he employed a nanny with a murky immigration status. But that was just the tip of the iceberg. In 2006, he pled guilty to accepting tens of thousands of dollars in gifts and bribes while he was working as city corrections commissioner. Under his plea agreement, he paid $250,000 in fines and avoided jail time. Well, now he's got jail time. Man. On his sentencing, he said, I make no excuses. I take full responsibility for my actions. I've learned from this. I know I will be punished. But I only wish you would allow me to return to my wife and two little girls as soon as possible. Wasn't he the one that had the apartment that was supposed to be used for R&R for the responders, first responders during the terror of September 11th, 9/11, and he used it to meet his girlfriend and boink her every chance he had. Huh? Right? Carrick had been scheduled to go to trial, but he pled guilty. He was going to go to trial on a variety of corruption charges, including allegations that he received and concealed benefits of $255,000 in renovations to his Riverdale, New York apartment from a company seeking to do business with the city of New York. Several tax-related counts in November. Just a corrupt son of a bitch. You knew it the first time you saw him. I can't wait till they finally nail Negroponte. Whatever happened to him and John Poindexter, whatever happened to those two, you know, when they're not visible, you know they're off working out mass killings and murder and genocide and torture chambers someplace. I want to know where Negroponte is and Elliot Abrams and John Poindexter. Those three who almost single-handedly, well, with Oliver North handling the wet work, are almost singly or collectively responsible for at least a quarter of a million deaths in Central America during the 80s. But they're American heroes to the right wing in this country. Sean Hannity would like to go to bed with Ollie North. He would never admit that, but you can just see the lust on his face, on Hannity's face, every time he's around North. Of course, North doesn't wear his Marine Corps uniform anymore. I have a feeling he probably got a letter from the Marine Corps that said, get our uniform off your ass now. There's no such thing as an ex-Marine except that guy. What a disgrace to the Corps. What an absolute disgrace. Okay. John is in Johnson City, Tennessee, listening online. Hey, John.
Hi, how are you?
I'm okay.
The right wing has set up a permanent minority, and they really weakened Democratic congressmen, et cetera, in areas like I live. This is a tri-city area. Mm-hmm. Most of the cities are 50,000 people. Can you hear me?
Yes, you're fine. Yeah, I'll tell you what, there's the music for a break. Let me put you on hold. We'll come back and pick up the call again. All right, John?
Sure.
All right, stay right there.
Systems fail. Hey, you, good looking female. Come here.
Up America, one flying monkey at a time. It's More Mike Malloy.
It's 21 past the hour. We were talking with John, who's in Johnson City, Tennessee. Okay, where were we, John?
Yeah, what the Republicans have done, or the corporations, they moved in years ago and bought up the local newspapers.
Mm-hmm.
The local newspapers still have the same name. Most people don't know it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so you flip over to a certain format. Then the FM talk station and the AM talk station, well, they're both far right wing.
Mm-hmm.
Then you take the local news. I think a lot of them are an hour now.
Mm-hmm.
And you also include a faith focus. Make sure, you know, to do that, and then whatever you say, nobody questions.
Include a what?
Faith focus. Focus on Christianity.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I'm sorry. I just didn't quite understand what you were saying. Yeah, right. You're absolutely right.
And they've taken over to the point where I can tell my own family things. I'm like, look, this isn't right. It's factually not right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's 16 other people that say it is. And it's not because my family's stupid.
Right.
You see, your show doesn't exist here.
Right.
I have to get it online.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how they're doing this. So we still elect people. So,
well, that is the big irritation for those of us on the political left or the liberal side or the progressive side, however you want to identify, who are struggling in media, and there's a handful of us who are told constantly by these right wing millionaires that the marketplace is determined that nobody wants to hear progressive talk. Right, that's what I do. I laugh too. Because given a choice, you know, if we can pick any city in America, I don't care if it's Bowling Green, Kentucky, or San Francisco, or New York, or it doesn't matter. And take a good, competent, entertaining liberal on talk radio and put him or her up against a typical right winger like Limbaugh or the rest of these pigs, and every single time the leftist or the liberal or the Democrat will beat the Republican's ass. Tom Hartman beats Rush Limbaugh in any market where they go up against each other in that time slot. And he's done this repeatedly. Now, I'm not saying that it happens every single ratings period, because in some ratings periods, Limbaugh will surge ahead. It depends on where those stupid books go. Randy Rhodes used to kick Rush Limbaugh's ass all across the map down in Florida. So the point is, every time I hear these right wingers talk about the market has decided, the marketplace has decided, I just want to, you know, I want to rip their eyes out.
Well, let me point out something else. See, across the state line in Virginia, we have a Democratic congressman.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's very weak because there's so much pressure put on.
Right, right.
And I hear pundits say, well, we'll need to replace these guys. Well, you won't, because they've got it locked in. And I'm sure there's a lot of other areas just like this where, you know, any other opinion is blacked out.
Right, absolutely.
I will say one thing. I think there is a way to beat them, if you would like to hear it.
Sure.
Off air, a strategy to stop them.
All right.
I'll tell you, because okay. If I tell you on air, of course, it's their strategy.
Right, okay.
You know, I'm just so frustrated I could die.
You know, I hear you.
But tell me how to get in contact with you, and I'll do that.
Send me an email, mike@mikemalloy.com. Just send me an email.
Okay, John from Johnson City.
Right.
Okay, I'm not real good at emails, so I'll do it.
Well, it's easy enough to do. You're listening online. Just write it out and send it to mike@mikemalloy.com.
Yeah, I see that. And I'll do my best to explain it.
Okay.
It won't be that easy.
All right. Fair enough.
But we can win, and there's just about only one way left, because this is what's happened. They've blocked all these areas out, so you can't get a great majority.
Yeah, I hear you. All right, John, send it to me. Send it to me. I'd like to see what you got to say. I really do. We got a break coming up here, John, so I got a boogie. Thanks. Appreciate you checking in, pal. We don't have enough time to take another caller, so let's just wait, do the break, and come back. The number here, we have a couple open lines. The number is 877-996-2556. 877-99-MALLOY, if you want to do it that way. I want to see what John's got to say. Wouldn't it be something if he had the absolute solution? And, you know, I looked at it and went, oh, my God. And sent it on to, you know, all the liberal media people. And they all looked at it and went, oh, this is simple as radar. Huh? No, I'm serious. That's where, you know, a lot of times brilliant ideas just pop up. Somebody says, well, why didn't I think of that? We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
And I think that you understand. But when I say that something, I want to hold your hand. But the Secret Service, they make me nervous. They make me nervous. Oh, yes, they do. When I hold you close to me, I want to tell you just how. They make me nervous.
Do you know why so?
Nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
Before the hour. David is in Little Canada, California.
Yes, it's your favorite fan in Minnesota, man.
It's what?
It's your favorite fan in Minnesota.
Oh, where are you calling from, David?
Little Canada, like last time.
Oh, Little Canada, Minnesota?
Yep, you got it.
Ah, okay.
Cool. You know, I wanted to talk to you about CPAC that occurred today. I don't know if CPAC's a long-going thing or if it's just today.
Right.
But they had some speakers today. They had, maybe you saw it, I don't know if you did or not. And I thought it was just really funny because the Conservative Political Action Committee seems very much like the Teabagger Committee.
Yeah.
What's going on over there?
Sure.
But what I found was really funny is it was just offensive rhetoric after offensive rhetoric. You had this young punk named Jason Matera, maybe you saw him.
No. All I've seen of that, we're going to have some sound from that tomorrow, but all I've seen is this crazy Cheney offspring and Boehner and the woman who opened the meeting, and I only saw maybe a minute from each, but they're crazy people.
Yeah, exactly. Well, what I found that was sort of funny was, they had actually made some racial undertones, not surprising, right?
Mm-hmm.
The thing I thought about it, a couple weeks ago, for some weird reason, I was watching Neil Cavuto, and there was one of the teabaggers, one of the leaders, named, I think he's a retired Marine named Steve McQueen, and it had shown Michael Steele saying that, if it was up to me, I'd be right out there marching with these teabaggers because, I'm for their cause. And this guy said, no, not so much, because right now the GOP's on probation because they screwed up too. But that's not necessarily true, because Republican leaders have been speaking at these things.
Well,
all of a sudden, along comes Michael Steele, and they don't want to talk to him.
Right. Well,
so, I mean,
I think the whole teabagger thing, David, every single bit of it has any energy in it at all because it feasts on racism. That's all it is. This is the KKK without the sheets. If you take a look at the crowds of these teabaggers, they're middle-aged white people who have been sucking everything out of the federal government they could get for years, whether it was unemployment compensation. Of course, that's not government, but you know what I mean. A lot of them now are using Medicare and Social Security. They expect the government to protect their savings. They expect the government to protect their jobs. They're hypocritical sons of bitches. And the only thing that keeps them together is the fact that they are racist. This is just like, man, I've seen it here in the South for years.
Yeah.
The only thing that keeps a lot of white people together is their collective contempt.
Hatred. But, it's right. Deeper than that, too, because here's the funny thing, Mike. Don't be mad at me for saying this, but up until a couple weeks ago, I actually felt for them because I thought they were people with legitimate grievances that were just getting their grievances pointed in the wrong direction by the Vipers, the Glenn Becks of the world.
Right.
But then I realized something, because I read a couple comments, one of them by David Nyward. I know you know David Nyward.
Yeah, right.
And another gentleman who posted a comment on Crooks and Liars. But one thing David Nyward said was, these guys weren't angry that the Republicans bowed down to the corporations. They were mad because they didn't suck up enough.
Right.
They want to get raped by private bureaucracy, not government bureaucracy.
Yeah, and you'll
notice. That's the problem with these people. And the other thing I want to mention real quick, too, was about colored Republicans. There was a gentleman who left a comment and said a couple of decades ago he had a beer with, who Dinesh D'Souza is?
Sure.
Dinesh D'Souza?
Oh, yeah.
He said, Dinesh, are you really a college? Do you really believe in all this conservative crap? You know what Dinesh said?
Probably.
He said, not really, but there's a lot of college students that are liberals, so I think I could get ahead being a conservative. Now, he maybe has believed the rhetoric over the years, but originally he was in it for personal gain.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's kind of funny. But what I mentioned earlier with Nyward's comments, I'm like, you guys realize that private bureaucracy will rape you way worse than government bureaucracy in the end?
Well, yeah, of course. But don't forget, the teabag movement is a phony construct that was based on racism and the mad ravings of a couple of people in right-wing talk radio, the leader of which is Glenn Beck. These people are racist. They do it for sport. They make millions, tens of millions of dollars. It's just a goddamn scam. It's a hustle. This is, and if you take a look at these crowds, what you always see are middle-class white people, usually overfed, bleached out, blue hairs that, like I said, you won't find poor people. You won't find people who want to really, overthrow the system and replace it with something that works. You won't find democratic socialists. What you'll find are lard-ass white people in their middle years or beyond who all of a sudden feel something they haven't felt for years, and that is they're part of something. They get to be part of the Glenn Beck movement. They get to be teabaggers. And what they're doing is what a lot of these right-wing groups have done historically. They're very slowly drawing the blade across their own throats, and they don't even notice when their bib overhauls are covered with blood. Hey, I got to leave there. Thanks, David. Appreciate you checking in, man. It's the ignorance. It's the collective moo-ism of these people. They're a bunch of, like a bunch of goddamn cows. Every time I see pictures of teabaggers or the CPAC convention, you know, I just, in the distance, in the, not so far in the distance, I hear this. Moo. Moo. Bah. Moo. Bah. And then above the din, you hear, just like an animal farm. You know, all animals are created equal, just some are more equal than others. You know how that goes. Moo. Bah. Jesus God. Larry's in Beardstown, Illinois, listening on XM. Hey, Larry.
Hey, Mike. That last little talk there you had about the teabaggers, that's just, boy, you're really hitting it right on the head. I've watched the Tea Party, this alleged grassroots movement since the beginning, and I can't believe how people actually seriously think that these are just independent, you know, grassroots, just plain folks that are
I think they even have a term for it. It's AstroTurf. It's all being ginned up by Dick Armey and Glenn Beck and Armey, who got out of the Congress before he would be indicted. It's crazy. It's absolutely insane. And these people, the leaders of these movements, these so-called movements, they're more like a bowel movement, but the leaders of these movements just continue to get, to milk these rubes dry. You know, buy this t-shirt, buy this book, buy this bumper sticker, pay $500 to attend the conference, do this, do that, give me your money. Hey, I'm coming to your town. Hey, I'm going to be in a movie, I'm going to be on your television screen with Bill, or your movie screen with Bill O'Reilly. Hey, it's only $25. Hey, here's 50. Hey, give me another 100. Hey, give me another 50. And these poor miserable sons of bitches continue to do it. So, you know, it's nice that you're compassionate enough to feel a little bit of a pity for, or if not pity, maybe a little interest in what their original position seemed to be, but believe me, it wasn't. These are well-fed, undereducated white people who have too much spare time. None of these sons of bitches work because they have retirements and they have Social Security and they have Medicare and they're retired.
Right, Mike. They're the type that want government to keep their hands off their Medicare and Social Security. And I hear that, I'm thinking, who the hell runs Medicare and Social Security?
Yeah, well, not only that, but they also want the government to guarantee their retirement funds, too.
Right.
And they want the government to make sure that there are enough young men and young women to go fight these wars so that the teabaggers can sit around and pretend like they're patriots. I hate these sons of bitches with a force I didn't know existed. Thanks, Larry. Appreciate you checking in. I really do. I really do. Not to the point where, you know, it makes me sick or it gets me all weirded out. The only time I think about these swine is when I do this program. I completely block them out, most of the time. And it's a kind of hatred that is not, it doesn't flow through my veins because I still get emails where people say, no, you're going to kill yourself. No, I'm not. I'm not going to kill myself at all. These are just scum suckers. I've said it before. I hate to share the same country with them, breathe the same air. This redstate.com freak who was at the teabag come CPAC convention today with this gibberish, this absolute monkey-like gibberish from these people. It's astonishing. Every time somebody sends me a link to some piece of dreck over at Free Republic or some of these websites that are populated by lard-ass cowards who sit around and post, but, well, you know, time's come, I'm going to get my gun. No, you're not, you turkey son of a bitch. You're going to sit there and just play tough guy while the world passes you by. That's all. You know it. I know it. Everybody knows it. You're a bunch of cowardly phonies, every single one of them. Oh, no, not this again. Robert, you're not going to talk about the Federal Reserve, are you?
I'm surprised you remember me from last time.
Yeah, I do. I just, hold on a second.
I promise I won't even touch the subject.
Okay, hold on. I got to do a break. We'll come right back. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us.
Sell your kids into slavery if it was worth a dime. You'd bulldoze your own backyard, then you'd come for mine. You're a nation of sheep, led by a handful of pigs.
Sherwood, Illinois, and you're not going to talk about the Federal Reserve, right?
No, I'm not going to talk about the Federal Reserve. But I do want to make mention to the fact that the origins of the Tea Party movement was kind of in the Ron Paul, like, election movement, like the internet-based movement to get Ron Paul elected. I mean, that's what where the Tea Party originally came from. And then what has happened is you've seen people like Glenn Beck and another Republican, like Sarah Palin said, we got to absorb them. Not actually take on their ideas and, you know, adopt what these people were originally saying, which was, we want smaller government. We don't need more taxation. We need more accountability. We actually need the truth from our elected representatives. And let's be honest, they need to start acting like public servants. That's what we need to call them. Not senators, not congressmen, not Mr. President, because that's how they bring this aura of superiority to us. They are not superior to us. They are public servants.
Well, but...
And
but,
that is what... I understand, sir and ma'am, and of course you want to be...
No,
respectful.
Robert, you, what you're saying makes perfect sense, but you and I both know that people do not go into careers in the House and the Senate to be considered servants. They go into careers. I'm not talking about people who just go for one or two terms and say, okay, time to move on to the real world again.
But who does that, though?
Well, that's the point. So when they move into a career, become career politicians, the idea of sir and ma'am, I'm sorry, the idea that they are our servants is just out the window. They become the elite. Don't forget, the Senate considers itself to be the most exclusive club in the world.
Well, for me, what upsets me about that is that the system can't really be changed, and it's proven by that.
Well, that's true. That's why a creative destruction is what we need here. This is what capitalism thrives on.
I asked my cousin Cindy. Her husband used to be an investment broker, and I used to have four checking accounts: one with Chase, one with Bank of America, and a couple others. But anyways, I asked him, "What can I do since these banks are taking our money, taking our taxes?" He goes, "You should invest in your local bank. Like, if you have a city bank, like I live in Shorewood, and we have Shorewood Bank." He goes, they have something called a municipal charter, which by law they have to invest a certain amount of that money back into the community.
Yeah.
A certain amount of those loans have to go back into the community.
Well, there's a big movement right now. I think Arianna Huffington is spearheading it to take all your money out of these big corporate monolithic
banks.
That's what
I've done. I got to be honest with you. I have two checkings now. I have two Shorewood checkings. A Shorewood savings and a TCF checking just because my mother works at Jewel.
Right.
And I'll be honest with you. Yeah, you don't have all the perks and all these, you know, oh, you get this stuff for free.
Well, you don't need it because none of it's free. They get you in the long run. We have dealt with a credit union. I can't remember the last time I had business with a bank except for our corporate account here, Malloy Broadcasting LLC. That is run by a bank because the credit unions don't handle that type of account, at least not the one I've dealt with since 1987. I would no more go into a bank to do business than I would open up a vein. Hey, I got to leave there, Robert. Thanks. I appreciate it. you know, deal with a local bank, really, or deal with a credit union. Why keep playing this capitalist banker's game? Everybody loses. These sons of bitches should be snuffed out. And the only way you snuff them out, you don't blow them up. You don't firebomb them. You just take your money out. Just walk away and give them the finger and take your money, put it in a community bank or a credit union. And just tell them to, you know, choke on their own waste. Now, I had Lori on the phone there, and I just hit the wrong button. So, Lori, I'm sorry. Oh, damn. I do that all the time. Well, not all the time. Have you got Glenn Beck barking? I've got to hear this. This miserable son of a bitch, he hasn't killed himself yet. That's amazing, because eventually I have a feeling that he's working up to that. Gee, I hope he doesn't. But if he's going to do it, I hope it happens on his program. All right, let's hear him barking.
Then his presidency has just created a situation worse than the Great Depression. Feel free to use that one in your re-election ad, President Obama. But this isn't the only time that he tried to play with the wording of things. Watch.
So far, the Recovery Act is responsible for the jobs of about 2 million Americans who would otherwise be unemployed.
Responsible. There we go with the progressive tactics at work again. Remember this phrase, control the language, control the argument. Common sense has destroyed the credibility of any kind of claim that it saved or created a billion jobs. Billion? So, change the language, control the argument. Now, he just said, it's responsible for those who would otherwise be unemployed.
Well, that ended up both being misspent. $787 billion spent out over 18 months. That's a lot. That's a lot of money.
It is.
And it is a testimony to Vice President Biden and his team that, as Joe puts it, the dog so far at least hasn't barked.
Ruff, dog hasn't barked. It's like a pack of wild cujos ripping up the flesh of the American people. We're giving you a dozen examples.
Stop it. I don't want to wind up a program with that garbage. This son of a bitch needs to just go ahead and get it on. Hey, Glenn, go get your pilot's license. See you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
When did your life start?